may recall from your youth that Uncle Maishi taught us that there are 613 mitzvot in the Torah. But before that, the Gemara in Masechus Makos, at the very end of Masechus Makos, told us that there are tarayag mitzvos in the Torah. At the end of this week's parsha, we have many of the karbanos that are outlined, and particularly the karbanos haregel, and the entire topic of karbanos and the mikdash and everything that relates to it is obviously a particular point of focus at this time of the year, meaning in the aftermath of Shivas or Batamuz, as we are within the period of the 3 weeks. So we're thinking a lot about mikdash and what was done in the mikdash. But this particular topic of karbanos and mikdash provides a unique challenge for the monei hamitzvos, for the rishonim who are into counting the mitzvos, the rishonim who list the tarayag mitzvos. See, if we were to list each of the details of the karbanos as a separate mitzvah and of the mikdash as a separate mitzvah, it would be impossible to whittle the mitzvos down to 613. We would just have so many of them that would be mikdash related that it would be impossible to land on the number 613. It seems that when Rav Simlai notes at the end of Masechus Makos that there are tarayag mitzvos in the Torah, he's not just making an observation, there's a tradition, meaning he's recording a tradition that is the number, that's the magic number, meaning that is to say that you could view this in two ways. One is that Rav Simlai sat down and he said, let me count the mitzvos in the Torah and see what it adds up to. And then he went through the Chumash and he went through all the Ma'amari Chazal and he realized with the Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh, end of the day, he adds it all up, computes, 613, okay, so it's 613. The other way to look at it is that there was this ancient tradition that there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Then they had to sit down and figure out, okay, how do we get to that? Meaning, I shouldn't say Rabbi Simlai, that the Rishonim have this tradition from Rabbi Simlai that there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So then they had to go figure out, okay, how do we get to it? So maybe Rabbi Simlai himself had such a tradition that there were 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So he's just recording the tradition, and therefore it's not our job to count how many mitzvahs there are. We know the number, we know the result, and we just have to figure out how to fit into that number. So that seems to be the approach, that we have this tradition, it's this ancient tradition. In fact, when Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel have a machlokas at the beginning of Masechus Sota as to three different items, whether they are a mitzvah or a rishus, lo yitama, mitzvah, or lo yitama, rishus, v'kine yisishto, mitzvah, or Rishus. What's the other one? What's the third one? Leol Ben Tavodu, right, mitzvah or Rishus, right? So Tosos on the spot says, well, wait a second, isn't that going to mess everything up in terms of cheshbening the 613 mitzvahs? You can't just like take something out. Someone's going to have three extra or three fewer mitzvahs. So Tosos points out that there will be a domino effect to that machlokas, because each opinion is still going to have to now account for the 613 mitzvahs. So how exactly to deal with the karbanos and with the mikdash in general, as far as monei mitzvahs are concerned, is the subject of machlokas and rishonim. I want to share with you two approaches, and then perhaps derive a lesson from these approaches. So, in accounting for the mitzvahs related to the mikdash, the Rambam and the Ramban have vastly different approaches. The shita of the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Chaf, is that all of it is one big mitzvah of Va'asuli Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Socham, the construction of the Mishkan, the Kelim. All of it are part of the same mitzvah. There is no independent mitzvah of building a menorah, a shulchan, a kiyor. It's building a mikdash, and that includes all of the furniture included, is the way the mitzvah goes. The Ramban in Mitzvah Lamed Gimel also agrees that you can't possibly count the construction of each of the kelim as an independent mitzvah. And if we did, the numbers would be way off, right? Meaning if you started to count each of the kelim as a separate mitzvah, it wouldn't work out. However, while he agrees to the Rambam that they're not counted as independent mitzvos, he has an entirely different reason for not counting them as independent mitzvos. According to the Ramban, they're not part of the mitzvah of building a mikdash, but are simply a hechsher mitzvah. They're simply a hechsher mitzvah for the avoda. That's the way to look at it. Meaning it's a hechsher mitzvah for the avoda that you're going to do with each of those kelim. So it's not that, you know, mishkan and mikdash means mikdash with menorah and shulchan and kiyor and everything else. No, it's that. Why do I not count building the kiyor as a separate, as we're building, let's say, the mizbech as a separate mitzvah? Because all the ma'aser kaparot that you do on the mizbech, the building of the mizbech is just a hechsher mitzvah for what you're going to do on the mizbech. Why do I not count the small mizbech as a separate mitzvah? Because Akhtaris is the real mitzvah, and the building of the small mizbech is the hechsher mitzvah to be able to be makdir Akhtaris. So I think what underlies all of this is that there's a fundamental machlokas, Rambam Ramban, as to what the purpose of a mishkan is, what the purpose of a mikdash is. What is the reason that we have a mikdash? And that can help frame our attitude toward missing the mikdash and toward our avelus over the loss of mikdash and toward what we are yearning for when we yearn for mikdash. The Rambam in Mitzvah Chaf defines mikdash as a base avoda, a place that, in the Rambam's words in the Alech Hazaka, is a place shemakrivin bo karbanos. The Ramban in Parshas Truma says that in the aftermath of Maimon Har Sinai, after experiencing the glow of Hashras Hashchina, the Jewish people needed a place for a continued sense of Hashras Hashchina. That continued sense of Hashras Hashchina happens in a mishkan, not a base avoda, but a base Hashem. Meaning it's either a place where we get to do the avoda, or that may be true, but fundamentally it's a Beis Hashem. That seems to be the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. Rav Yonatan Sacks, on one of his visits to Keli a couple of summers ago, suggested that the two disputes are connected with each other. You know, sometimes you'll see Rav Sacks, Beis Hashem is going to be coming this Monday, you'll see when Rav Sacks sometimes gives a shiur, like you picture in your mind the Rambam and the Ramban like embracing in Shemayim and celebrating as their opinions are so expertly and clearly being expressed in this world, that the Ramban is like, finally someone gets it, you know, like, and he knows how to say it and knows how to present both points of view. And what Rav Sacks explained is that for the Rambam, the purpose of the Beis Hamikdash is avoda. It therefore stands to reason that making the clay avoda, the utensils that enable the avoda, are part of the mitzvah of mikdash, because that's what a mikdash is. A mikdash is a place of avoda. So if that's how you define mikdash, making the clay avoda is going to be part of the mitzvah of mikdash. But for the Ramban, mikdash is not fundamentally a place of avoda. Mikdash is a place of hashras hashchina. So avoda is sort of separate from the idea of mikdash, or the primary idea of mikdash. The making of the utensils can't be part of the mitzvah of asiyas mikdash, because fundamentally the mitzvah of asiyas mikdash is building a makom hashras hashchina. So they're part of the mitzvah of each avoda, because those are separate. The idea of doing each and every avoda, since there is no avoda done with the Aron, so the Ramban, not surprisingly, actually has no choice but to count the Asiyas HaAron as a separate mitzvah, right? Because there is no Avoda, so it's not a Hechsher mitzvah, but the Aron has to be built, so that's a separate mitzvah. Now, if we were to consider what that means for us in terms of our yearning for the Mikdash, what it turns out is that what we're yearning for is two things. We're yearning for a Makom Avoda and a Makom Hashra'as Hashchina. And I think it makes sense, as we're trying to get the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt, as we're trying to like march toward a sense of Geula, and Geula is defined as a Asiyas Mikdash, as Rav Shachter often points out. The Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin tells us that the Geula process involves three steps. We have Lahamila HaMelech, Lahachris Arashel HaMelech, V'livnos Lahem Beis HaBechira. That's what it says, that the Sholosh Mitzvos in Stavu Yisrael, we have three mitzvos that we have to do to achieve Geula, and they are, first, to establish a Jewish government in the state of, in the land of Israel, second, to destroy Amalek, and third, Livnos Lahem Beis HaBechira. The Ramban, in his introduction to Sefer Shemos, defines the Sefer, he says Chazal defined the Sefer as the Sefer HaGeula, and the Ramban says, why is it called the Sefer HaGeula? Not because that's when we got out of Mitzrayim. No, that's only the beginning of the Sefer. It's called Sefer HaGeula because of what happens at the end of the Sefer. At the end of Sefer Shemos, we build a Mishkan. That's Geula. Geula is building a mikdash. So as we look toward trying to achieve geula, we should probably frame it in this way by looking at these two ideas that the mikdash represented. On the one hand, it represents a makom avoda, and that involves a recognition that our avoda, as we have it today, we have some approximation of avoda, but our avoda, as we have it today, is sorely lacking. You know, we think of the Pesach Seder, for example, as the greatest experiential element of the Jewish calendar, or let's say Yom Kippur, davening in shul all day with you know, everyone in their kittels and their talesim, and no one's eating, and everyone feels like a malach. Like, that's the great. If you were to take someone from the Zman Bayis, the Zman Beis HaMikdash, and like, so put him in a time machine and bring him to one of our Siddurim, he would say, he would cry. He would say, that's it? Where's the Karban Pesach? Where's the rooftops of Yerushalayim coming off because of the challah that's being sung in Yerushalayim, and the shifts and all the chaos of making sure that everyone can eat the Karban Pesach on the ground level and then go up to the Igra and sing the challah? What's going on over here? What did your Erev Pesach look like if you weren't going to Har HaBayis bringing Karban Pesach? If you were to take someone, put him in a time machine and bring him to Har Yom Kippur, and you know, he would see, oh, we're singing this piyut of Mara Kohen. Where's the Kohen? I don't see any Kohen. Where's the Beis HaMikdash? Where's the Kodesh HaKadoshim? It's the Iker parts of the Avoda aren't here. Whatever Avoda we have is a shell of itself. It's not the same. There's very little of our Avoda that we have exactly as it ought to be. I heard Rav Chaim Waxman, as I was driving yesterday, I was listening to Rav Chaim Waxman, he said that he quoted the Chidah, that the Chidah says, with one exception, there's one element of Avoda that we have just as much today as they had in the Zman Beis HaMikdash, and that is Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah did not change one bit. Talmud Torah is exactly the same Talmud Torah, the Zman Beis HaMikdash Yekayim, and after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. And that's why Talmud Torah is what keeps the Jewish people going. The ability to learn Torah is that, because that's all we have in its pristine form. So if we cherish Avoda, if we miss Avoda, if we desire Avoda, it's worthwhile probably to focus on that Avoda that we still have, on the Avoda that we still have in the most perfect form. And therefore, these 3 weeks might be a good time. Sadly, it's often a time of Ben Hazmanim, but it might be a good time to intensify that level of Avoda. But then there's the second element as well, the Ramban's Mikdash. Ramban's Mikdash is not a Makom Avoda. I mean, it is, but that's not primarily what it is. The Ramban's Mikdash is a Makom Hashra'as HaShchina. And perhaps to appreciate Makom Hashra'as HaShchina, and to demonstrate that we're ready for a Makom Hashra'as HaShchina, what we need to develop is a sense of appreciation for Hashra'as HaShchina, appreciation for Kedusha. And if we so desire and we so miss that intense Kedusha of a Makom Kadosh like that, then whenever we do get to encounter Kedusha, perhaps it's our responsibility to show the Ribbono Shel Olam that we appreciate that Kedusha, that we're sensitive to Kedusha. And that comes in a number of ways. Obviously, Kedusha Saritz Yisrael, that we appreciate and we're sensitive to Kedusha Saritz Yisrael. But Kedusha comes in other forms as well. We have such a concept called a Mikdash Ma'at, the Gemara Megillah tells us. And a Mikdash Ma'at is a Beis HaKnesses. But the Medrash, places that have Kedusha, that aren't necessarily in Eretz Yisrael, but they represent a certain level of Kedusha. There are halachos associated with these places. And to be more sensitive, perhaps, to the Kedusha of a Makom. Maybe even just as importantly, maybe even more importantly, the Kedusha of a Jew, the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. We know why the Beis HaMikdash, why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, according to the Gemara, was Sinas Chinam, which means that we failed to recognize the Kedusha of other people. You know, you could look at a room full of people, and there are, whatever, 30 people here, and you could say that, okay, there are 30 people, different levels, and some people are better guys and worse guys and this and that. But you say, no, there are 30 pure holy neshamos that, you know, have a chelik elukam ma'al, you know, to use, if you're comfortable with the Lashon of Balatam, to say that you have 30 elements, sparks of absolute Kedusha, and to appreciate the Kedusha of another person. And when we fail to do that, we're telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we don't really connect to Kedusha. that even though we're surrounded by holy neshamos, by people who have who have a din of a sefer Torah. Halacha is that that a Jewish person dies in Teir Kriya, and if a sefer Torah gets burnt to Teir Kriya, because it's the same din that it's a Jewish person has a status of a sefer Torah. What do you do with the sefer Torah? Shechta points out in Eretz Tzvi. What do you do with the sefer Torah after it can't be used anymore? You put it in Geniza. You don't just throw it out. What do you do with the Jewish person after he dies? He's chayv in kavura, right? Because it needs to be Geniza, because it's a walking sefer Torah. That's when the Beis Halevi developed that idea that we are the walking Torah Shebal Peh. And it's Kasuva Luach Libecha, where the parchment, the Luach Libecha, is the parchment for the Torah Shebal Peh, to appreciate that about other people. You know, Chazal tell us that Shkula Sinas Chinam Keneged Gimel Averos Chamuros, that the Sinas Chinam weighs as much, or is just as severe, the way it's often translated, as all three Averos Chamuros, as Avod Zar Gilarai Shvichas Damim. And the question one has to ask is, really? Is it really as severe as all three of those things? Is it even Yaharig Val Yavar? You know, don't hate that. I want you to hate that guy or I'll shoot you, right? Do you really have to take the bullet for Sinas Chinam? I mean, is it really as severe? What's the onesh for Sinas Chinam? Is it, you know, I know what the onesh is from the Zar Gila Reis and Shvichas Damim. What's the onesh? Like, you're walking down the road in camp and you say, oh, that guy, I hate that guy. So, like, if Edim Hasra'a, Skila, Srefa, Herak, what would you get for that with the Edom and Israel? Nothing, right? Meaning it would be a lav shem b'mais, so it would be, unless you do something. But, is it really as severe? So Ephraim Waxman pointed out that sinas chinam shkula. Shkula means it weighs. It weighs a person down. It holds a person back as much as Avodah Zarah Gilurei Shvichas Damim can hold a person back. It holds a person back from achieving. It holds a person back from growing. Because when a person has these silly arguments with other people and these debates with other people and these hang-ups about other people, it weighs on the person. It holds them back from being a positive person, from being, even like you see sometimes people get into an argument and they argue about the stupidest things and it becomes self-defeating. They're just hurting themselves. Rabbi Waxman gave the example sometimes, like, you know, we're most of us are from New York, so we probably see this out, where like two people are like, you know, there's double parked on both sides of the road, so only one car could fit through at a time. So two people come and they're like a stalemate, right? Like neither car wants to yield to the other car, right? So what do they do? So one etza is you could just back up your car, let the other guy go, and then 10 seconds later you'll be able to go. No, that's what we do. We roll down the window and we scream, "I was here first!" And the other guy says, "No, I was here." And for the next 10 minutes they'll argue about who is there first, right? Which they might as well be screaming out the window, "I'm a total idiot. I'd rather waste 10 minutes and aggravate myself than spend 10 seconds and back up my car." And that's what we do. It just weighs on us, just holds us back. It holds us back from going places. So if we're going to appreciate what Mikdash is, we're going to try to achieve a sense of Mikdash, we should think about the Rambam's Mikdash, and we should think about the Ramban's Mikdash. Think about enhancing our sense of Avoda, and the only pristine form of Avoda, according to the Chidah that we have today, is the Avoda of Talmud Torah, and we should think about what it means to have a proper sense of Ashras HaShchina, to have a proper sense of Kedusha that is all around us. Okay.